Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, store news, and whatever games, movies, and TV is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now, on with the show. Welcome to Roguecast, episode 212.
The epic 212.
Yes.
I associate those, as we've discussed, with comics that
yep.
I've read.
Yep.
And I believe this was right around the era that 212 that I would be almost done with the X-Men, and you would be about to maybe start in another year or so.
No, I started at 196.
Okay, that's right. If I'm not mistaken, I'm trying to remember if 212 was like that wasn't. You remember that trio of like older heroes that they fought? One was the
that
Super
was
Speedster.
Much later. That was later in actually. That was later Freedom Force stuff, I think.
They showed up in the early 200s.
I don't know. Now I'm curious.
I'm going to look it up
okay,
while look it up. We continue on.
See, what I associate with is that Jon Stewart on The Daily Show had a running joke where it'd be like, Chuck, roll 212.
Is that that was their number?
Yeah, that was their number, yeah, I believe. So yeah, but anyway, this weekend is free RPG day. You can come on out, play some indie RPGs, and pick up some free RPG day stuff. That is Saturday, June 16th. And then next Saturday is our All Ages Awesomeness, the 8th annual All Ages Awesomeness. We'll have 4 different artists out here doing sketches for kids and possibly for nice adults.
Maybe.
that's on Saturday, June 23rd. And then coming up in July, we have the Magic 2019 open house and then pre-release. There's more details on that coming. And then we just found out on Tuesday, July 3rd, we're going to be doing a big summer midnight release thing.
Yeah.
Because everybody is releasing their comics at midnight on Tuesday, July 3rd. So, y'all have July 4th off, right? Because it's a holiday. Not us, but other...
And it's like, it's headlined by the wedding thing, right?
So, that's there's a couple deal. Headliners. The big thing, Batman's Wedding, number 50. Also, Captain America, number 1 by Ta-Nehisi Coates.
Yep.
And a few other notable things.
Catwoman, number 1.
There's actually a lot coming out. But it is... DC decided to do it for Batman, Marvel followed suit with Captain America, then slowly but surely Image, Dynamite, Boom, all those people joined in, and basically it's going to be a free it's going to be a new comic day at midnight on Tuesday, July 3rd. So we'll all be here late to sell you comics.
It's true.
Yep.
It's a Tuesday night, Wednesday.
Yes. All right, so let's go on to news. There is a Stranger Things novel about Eleven's mom coming out in 2019.
I thought this was cool, because there's a lot of story you can capitalize on that, and they want to move forward, so maybe not, like, rehash that.
Right.
So it's a good way of doing it. I don't remember who was writing this one, but I was excited to read it, because I really like
Straight-up novel, YA novel?
It's a straight-up novel. It's being released by Gwenda Bond, who did the Lois Lane trilogy, and Girl in the Shadows, which are both, I think, YA.
Yeah, that is.
So it sounds like maybe in that vein. It is about the Terry Ives, a college student who is being experimented on by Project MK Ultra. That's what gives them 11.
Yeah.
I don't have any real interest, but I'm glad that people are going to have novels.
Yes.
I'm going to interrupt for just a moment. I've looked up the X-Men stuff.
Okay, yeah.
So 212 was a Wolverine versus Sabretooth fight, probably one of their first early big fights. Rick Leonardi drew it. Huh. It didn't ring a particular bell for me, though the cover had Wolverine turning around all blood-spattered, kind of.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Was that not part of, like, Mutant Massacre?
It was just after Mutant Massacre.
Yeah, just after Mutant Massacre, okay. That's right.
Issue 215 is the one I was thinking of, Randy, with
those. Oh, yeah, okay.
Was it Crimson Commando, Super Saber, and Stonewall? Are those analogs to, like, DC heroes
they
or something?
They probably are, although Crimson Commando was kind of a Captain America type.
I guess the idea was Claremont must have wanted to do something with what would be Silver Age heroes, like the Justice Society over, but I guess they're probably not particularly analogous.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I mean... They sort of were, because the one of the dudes was super
speedster.
Strong, one of them was a speedster, one of them was like a commando type, so there's something to be said for that being
I guess one of those would be almost a little bit more Marvel,
yeah.
Silver Age.
Yeah.
So I think, I don't know if is there anybody who's like just strong?
I don't know.
But, yeah, a little bit of both maybe?
Yeah, they could be, I don't know. I'd forgotten those characters.
Are they called something together?
No.
For those who are like, who are we talking about? There was the X-Men ran into this trio of, like, essentially what would be, like, retiree heroes, and they have to fight them, but I
They were doing like a World's Most Dangerous Game type thing.
Oh, that's right. Was it to keep their energy and excitement alive? Something like they missed the game?
I don't know. Storm was the one. Wasn't she non-powered and she got captured
Yes,
by them?
That's exactly right. Yeah. That's exactly right. I guess the lesson is probably don't trust old people or veterans.
Yeah.
I think that's probably what they want to impart.
Because probably what that probably if they're old veterans, they're going to trap you onto some kind of dangerous game.
World's Most Dangerous Game. Yeah. Yeah, when you don't have your powers.
Style? Yeah. That's good to know. It's good lesson, good life lesson.
Did Tom Berenger do a version of that?
Wasn't it like Surviving the Game? Wasn't that essentially the same
That is a movie that as many people have heard of as Stonewall, Crimson Commando and whatever the other. Surviving the Game. I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
So I think it was Tom Berenger and like Ice-T.
What
Tom Berenger was the substitute principal who became a mercenary became a substitute principal
in the Substitute.
The Substitute, yes.
And wasn't there a movie circa the 90s?
A third one that had Treat Williams.
Yes. What was the one where they were trying to find treasure that was in the inner city and it seemed almost like it might be a Good, the Bad, and the Ugly? Everybody had a piece of the information one. I thought it had Ice-T too.
You talking about a movie?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't remember this one.
Nick, surely you must know it. I'm probably misstating its premise. We'll come back to that because I'm sure our audience really wants to know.
I'm sure they do. All right. Speaking of old movies, Halloween has a new trailer.
Nicely segued. Right. So there's been like 8 or 10 Halloween movies, including some Rob Zombie remakes.
Yep.
The original was the famous, probably the most famous of them John Carpenter. And it both like... It was probably the best example that you're going to get of the slasher genre.
If I remember correctly, it was like Jamie Lee Curtis's first role, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. She would appear like a year or two later in The Fog,
and
also
this is
from
like
John Carpenter.
Headlined by Donald Pleasance.
Yeah, he was Michael Myers' psychiatrist. Mike Myers is the guy wearing the scary Inside Out William Shatner mask.
Yeah.
Although that, of course, is just fan trivia. It's not, of course, part of the movie.
It was kind
of
cool. My wife had never seen this, and it was. And I was like, you should see this. We will watch it. And I got to rewatch it a couple of nights ago, and it still holds up. It's still kind of creepy. And it kind of surprises me in sort of how small in scope it really is.
Well, in the trailer for despite all the sequels, this one is kind of like ignoring all of them, as occasionally
happens
nowadays.
Even the second one, which was actually Carpenter.
Or written by him, but not directed. And they are this one talking about the events of the original, they mention 3 people dying, and that is like the total body count of the original movie. Is 3
people. 10 movies and 3 people died?
10 movies in the original one.
Okay.
Well, no, in the original one, he kills I think 4 because he killed like the guy he got his clothes from, the truck driver, and then
did
the
kill
kids.
Him? He just pulls him out.
No, he literally kills his body in the weeds.
Well, I thought the movie said he killed 3 people that night.
Didn't they say killed 3 kids or something?
Oh, okay, yeah. That's probably what was
made
nobody
cares.
Headlines.
You don't, you kill as many adults as you want, because they're just going to put you in dangerous games.
That's true.
That's self-defense.
No, but this trailer, I mean, it's big for Jamie Lee Curtis is back.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of reprising her role.
I was not sure. She, you know, the deal is that she clearly traumatized her. She's a grandmother now in this, and like her granddaughter, I guess, is probably going to be the central character, sort of, or maybe is one of
the babysitter, ones. Essentially.
Okay, yeah, and you know, she's like, there's like 2 different scenes that show her with guns, and I was a little worried that they're going to like lose some scariness because she's so ready to confront him with weapons in hand, and like that might just not be scary. Donald Pleasance was a pistol-packing psychiatrist in the original.
And it's not like... Jamie Lee Curtis stabbed Michael Myers several times, like, with a knife.
But she was so not ready to do it.
Well, it's true.
She was a person who rose above it all. And in some ways, one of those early...
With a hanger.
Like like Ripley in Aliens, she was kind of one of the early feminist survivor hero types. But yeah, she was not... Not a trained badass like, what do you call it? Sarah Connor would become an Aliens or anything like that. She was more like Sarah Connor in the first one. She just survived. That was a thing.
Yep.
I mean, of course, we talked about that book a few months ago, Nick,
Final Girls.
That sort of played on that trope. Randy, what did you think? You haven't seen really Halloween stuff much. Maybe the first one?
No, I've never seen a Halloween movie. I don't care.
You've never seen the first one?
Nope.
Oh, okay. You should watch it if you like The Thing and stuff like that.
The thing is, the slasher movie, and I understand Halloween is one of the originators and all that, it is a genre that is not interesting.
Well, I don't like slasher movies either, but there's just good movies, and it's one of those.
Have you not seen Scream either?
I've seen Scream, and I liked it at the time.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I just... it's a genre that does not interest me. It's, I don't know, something about it just doesn't...
No, I mean, that's, I don't like. That's
well,
fine.
There is a sort of innately dehumanizing thing about it where it's just like watching annoying kids get stabbed.
Yeah, and which, again, should be super fun.
but, and it actually, it is for many. I've never fallen into it as a horror fan. I guess I kind of, in my teen years, I kind of watched the slasher movies out of obligation. I feel like
right.
you're supposed to.
Right.
But...
there are exceptions. There are ones that I've liked.
Sure, they've at this point they've reinvented it enough, and that there's been some exceptions.
I think what we really need is a movie in which the teenagers go around stabbing annoying old people who are trying to drag them into their world's most dangerous games.
I think they should stab the annoying old people who are about to hit post on a millennials killed such and such industry.
Millennials killed you.
Yeah, they probably
I feel
need
like
to
I've
do
made that.
That
a couple of times.
But the original one was somewhat notable. There, I guess there had already been some stalker-type movies, like probably that one where in the 70s where... what was the... When a Stranger Calls yeah. and other yeah. stuff like that, where it was starting to come around. And I think this was kind of notable because its sympathies were with its characters. Mm-hmm. Like, Laurie had some annoying friends, but I don't think they were supposed to be like, I want them to die. And certainly the sympathies were with her in the end. So yeah, it kind of was iconoclastic. Unfortunately, inspired a bunch of crap ass run of the mill slasher movies. Nick, did you ever watch the Rob Zombie ones?
Did not.
Me neither.
I watched one of Rob Zombie's horror movies, and while it was a train wreck and I couldn't look away, I decided I would never watch one again.
I've still never seen one. Was it House of a Thousand Corpses?
It was.
Yeah.
I just.
Were there actually 1,000 corpses?
I don't remember.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Yeah, like the count. I just counted it like him during the entire movie.
1, 2, 3, 1,000.
One corpse. Yes.
One corpse. 2 corpses.
So, what was interesting about this trailer, though, is that to take it back to, is it just called Halloween?
Just called Halloween.
Okay, so the sequel to Halloween is Halloween.
Yeah, but not the sequel to Halloween is Halloween, but it is not Halloween 2007, which was also called Halloween, which is Rob Zombie's Halloween.
No. So, the sequel to Halloween, not to be confused with Halloween.
Can I real quick run through Halloween? I've got the wiki pulled up.
Yeah.
Halloween, Halloween 2, Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, which has nothing to do with the other Halloweens.
Correct.
It's true.
It was when they were going to turn it into an anthology series.
Halloween 4, The Return of Michael Myers, because it didn't work.
Right.
Halloween 5, The Revenge of Michael Myers. Halloween, The Curse of Michael Myers. Not Halloween 6. Halloween, The Curse of Michael Myers. Halloween H2O, 20 years later. I don't even know what numbering that is.
I actually like that one quite a bit.
That's Halloween 7, although it's Halloween H2O, which translates to 7, I guess, in French. Halloween Resurrection, which I don't know how many resurrections there have been at that point, but it seems like that's... And then Halloween and Halloween 2, which Halloween 2 is not the same Halloween 2. It's actually Halloween 10.
Yes.
So anyway, Hollywood should be banned from making sequels, is what I'm saying.
You know, if I'm
I mean,
not mistaken...
comics numbering is just as bad.
In Halloween 2... Yeah, it's true.
It is.
In Halloween 2, the story that John Carpenter wrote, that was where they suggested the idea that... not suggested it, what became canon at the time, that Laurie... that Michael Myers was Laurie's brother.
Yep.
And also, in the end, he is... definitively killed.
Yeah.
He, like, burns to death, you know, in a... Since he was never meant to be, like, supernatural per se, at least at the time, that was a definitive death. If I'm not mistaken, in one of those, like, lightning struck and resurrected him, right? Didn't it? Something like that.
I don't remember.
Is that not Jason? Jason got resurrected by lightning.
Oh, man, that might have happened to both. I don't know. Or maybe some teens did a ritual and accidentally summoned him back. I don't know. I'm sure it was great.
I'm sure teens did some stupid thing and it caused him to come back to life.
So, Nick, you think this is going to be any good?
I don't know. I have hopes because I thought the trailer looked interesting and well shot. I like Jamie Lee Curtis, so...
Is it director anybody?
I don't know.
Do we even know?
Yeah, I don't know. But... it had enough in it that I was like, oh, I'll probably go see that.
Yeah.
I mean, like we've said, slasher movies are not amongst our favorites, but I do have a fondness for the first one. So,
David Gordon Green is the director. He's done George Washington, All the Real Girls, and Snow Angels, as well as the thriller Undertow.
If anybody's seen any of those, Nick, it's you.
I recognize Undertow, but I can't remember.
Then in 2008, transitioned to comedy, directing Pineapple Express, a movie I hated, Your Highness and The Sitter.
Okay, so he was making stoner comedies.
As well as episodes of Eastbound and Down on HBO.
That's why Danny McBride is in it.
In 2013, he returned to do dramatic Prince Avalanche and Joe. He then directed some episodes and executive produces Red Oaks on Amazon. This guy's all over the map.
Yeah, Red Oaks was funny. It was solid.
Danny McBride co-wrote this.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't know.
Okay, now I'm starting to get worried.
I'm thinking there may be a lot of stoner jokes in this one.
I mean, Danny McBride just usually rubs me the wrong way, honestly. Yep.
Yeah.
I do not find his humor particularly great.
I'm not a huge fan either.
Every once in a while, he'll slide into a role that's kind of fun, but for the most part, I find him annoying.
It sounds kind of like when they were like telling me that Seth Rogen was co-writing Preacher, where I was like, oh, okay.
I've liked more Seth Rogen than I have liked Danny McBride.
Same.
Guess what we're trying to say, people, is that while we would like this movie to be good, Randy, it's suddenly the odds are looking a little bit
rough. Randy, thank you for successfully destroying my hopes for this movie.
You're welcome. You're welcome. However, the other trailer is one that I'm super excited about, and that is Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Oh, man, this looks so good.
The first teaser we got for this was so cool. It was, like, great music,
yeah,
and a good look, and it was Miles Morales, and we didn't really know what was going on, but it was, like, it was really promising. And then we get the full trailer, and, man, I'm so excited for this.
The art style is fantastic. A lot of people are assuming, like, direct-to-video, or I think that's what people were saying, but this is theaters.
I think a lot of people were assuming it was going to be sort of set in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It is clearly a alternate Spider-Man. Oh,
I never thought it was going to be set in the Cinematic Universe.
I've heard people who thought it
was. Yeah, people think...
Dum-dums.
So they've cast Nick from New Girl, Jake Johnson, I think? Or Jake Johansson?
I'm not sure.
I don't remember his name.
I just know him as Nick from New Girl.
He's Nick from New Girl. So this is kind of an older, slacker, tired Spider-Man, walking miles through...
Yeah, taking kind of a protege, mentor role.
Yeah.
As far as, like, Randy, you mentioned it was, like, looks like it's set in the Ultimate Universe or something like it anyway. Because I did see that big old Hulk-looking version of the Green Goblin.
Yeah.
Yep. Not my favorite, but I have some hope that these guys can find the right thing to do with it.
It looks good in animation.
Yep. The writing, the music, and stuff on it, the animation certainly, has a style all of its own.
Also, of course, Spider-Gwen shows up.
And Spider-Gwen shows up.
Which I assume means they're incorporating Spider-Verse into it.
The title is actually called, like, Into the Spider-Verse.
I think we're going to see a bunch of alternate Spider-Men, which is cool.
Which is kind of awesome.
Yeah. What's funny is, I remember looking back at that, everyone was nervous about the Spider-Verse. Like, oh, it's a whole bunch of Spider-Man and alternate universes. This sounds terrible.
Well, like any of those things that Dan Slott came up with that sounded awful, he made work.
It was a great story. Yeah, it really worked. And now it's going to become a thing that a lot more people know about, which is interesting. So, yeah, that's a great trailer. Jumping back to terrible. Jared Leto is going to make a Joker movie, maybe, possibly. It's in the works.
Man.
Was that this week? I thought that had already been, like, announced or
discussed. It was right after we recorded last week.
I'm not, like, the biggest hater on his version of the Joker. I thought it was okay in Suicide Squad.
It was fun.
I just don't know if I want an entire movie dedicated to it.
Yeah, like, the guy himself sounded like he was, like, a super creep on the set. Yeah,
completely.
And, but... But as it may, like, his version of sort of a glam crime boss Joker didn't seem wildly insane to me, and I liked it all right.
I don't really want a Joker movie.
You know what I feel like? And I may be crazy.
Hot Topic gotta sell stuff, Nick.
I may be crazy, but I feel like you should successfully launch a Flash movie, a Green Lantern movie, or maybe a Superman movie before you do a Joker movie.
Well, hypothetically, yes, but... I will say, for better or worse, DC has decided to do some weirder, darker stuff and do things out of order and
worse.
All that. But they also... Green Arrow was a TV show that launched their whole TV empire right now. So they've done some weird stuff, and sometimes it's paid off. Yeah, in the movies, I would say generally it hasn't. But
their movies are definitely a hodgepodge.
They want to be this dark, edgy thing, and if they're going to stick with that... It makes sense. It's going to be horrible, but it makes sense in its way.
Yep.
I think that they, if in their mind's eye, I think what they want is for, like, that to take off and people to think DC is super cool and edgy and Marvel is, like, where the wuss movies go. And
last Marvel movie made children cry. I think that's fairly edgy.
I know, but in my head, though, this is what they want, is that they want all the kids, they want the youth of today, they want the millennials and stuff on their side, and they want DC to be badass.
They might as well start marketing the incels. don't know. I'm disgusted with DC at this point. Which brings us to DC. So there must have been something going on with DC this week because there's a bunch of big news. The biggest is that Geoff Johns is stepping down as COO and launching his own production company that's going to do TV and movies and comics. So he is no longer chief creative officer or chief operating officer, or whatever he was, and instead he's going to be writing a.
Well, I thought he was primarily becoming a writer.
Well, he's writing Shazam.
Yep.
And he's writing a Three Jokers book.
Right, which is a weird callback to from the launch of Rebirth. That notion, which seemed like at the time like it was going to be some key thing to all the Rebirth comics and Batman from there on out, but then they're like, they kind of just let it drift away for a few years.
Yeah, although his DC imprint is called The Killing Zone, which is weird.
Not so weird.
I mean...
The maiming zone would be better, you're right. But anyway, Geoff Johns is going back to writing more comics, and that's, I guess, a good thing if you like Geoff Johns comics. And he's stepping down from DC, which puts Jim Lee and DiDio more firmly in control of the wheel, which I think is terrible.
Do we think that there's going to be anybody replacing him?
I don't think so, no. Jim Lee is replacing him. Jim Lee is being promoted to his role.
Oh, okay. He's just actually being promoted. Yeah. I thought that he was kind of already in that essentially creative advisor capacity.
He's being given the official title.
Mm.
Basically what they're saying is, good job, you guys.
Coming up next, more of the same.
Yeah. So... if you're enjoying what DC is doing, good news.
Clearly a lot of our customers are.
Yeah, a lot of people are.
Let's see, what's John's been writing in the last few years? Doomsday Clock. Yeah. What else?
That's very it. Little.
Yeah,
actually.
That's it.
I guess he's been writing stuff off and on, like, for Flash TV show or some... He has some hand in some of those, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah. But for the most part, he's kind of stepped away from comics, so this will be a... Interesting to see him. And he's also writing the script for the Green Lantern Corps movie, I guess.
Right. I don't know if we have this listed separately on there to talk about that.
I didn't.
But and nobody knows if that's ever going to happen. But it seems like he's pushing for it. It's supposed to be based on his run.
Yeah.
Which I assume means, you know, we'll get some of the multiple Lantern Corps stuff that
he created. Yeah, I would imagine so. Which would make sense.
That's probably the last really huge thing he wrote. I mean, Doomsday Clock is huge, but we time will tell.
But his Green Lantern opus was kind of his biggest thing.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Definitely, it came out, you know, did bigger than his Flash, which
preceded
it.
Oh, very much so.
Or his JSA stuff. I'm sort of neither here nor there on that. I sort of fell out of being enamored with Johns, like, I don't know, 10 or more years ago. So, he can sometimes pull something off, but I don't expect it from him necessarily.
Yeah.
We'll see. Nick?
I mean, I'll read John's stuff. He always at least has some...
Would you rather have him as creative director or writer?
I'll take writer.
You have to choose right now.
I'll take writer.
You won. It's happening.
Sure.
They also unveiled the new lineup for DC Zoom and DC Inc., which is their... DC Zoom is a launch of young reader graphic novels targeting middle grade readers 8 to 12, and then DC Inc. targets readers 13 and up. So DC Zoom is going to be a Super Sons graphic novel, a Superhero Girls graphic novel, which sounds like Super Sons might be going the sort of Superhero Girls route, which is interesting. A Batman Overdrive... by the writer of Superhero Girls.
Well, do we know why it's called Overdrive?
Black Canary Ignite. Okay. No, they've got a bunch of creators. I'm not reading them because we don't know who any of them are.
Right.
None of us know them. They're big in the YA.
Well, I mean, like Percy Jackson, the Ridley Pearson who's doing Super Sons is the guy who did Percy Jackson.
That's
books.
Pretty notable.
Mariko Tamaki has been writing a bunch of stuff, and she's writing.
In the DC Inc. has Mera Tidebreaker, Under the Moon, A Catwoman Tale, Harley Quinn Breaking Glass, and Teen Titans Raven. Interestingly, all female books.
Yeah.
All female-led books, which I did not know was specifically aimed at sort of a that market.
I mean, I guess, does a female audience dominate the YA genre?
To some extent, I think, yes, but there's definitely, I mean, there's a YA...
Right, Percy Jackson would be an obvious exception among others, but...
Yeah.
And that Harley Quinn one by Mariko Tamaki is actually going to be illustrated by Steve Pugh. Got some good
These
people.
Are graphic novels, not illustrated prose?
Right, graphic novels.
Okay. I mean, that all sounds pretty good. I kind of, I feel like I have somewhat more interest in that than the mainline DC universe.
The problem is it's definitely not aimed at me in any way at all. So it's... I'm glad they're doing it, but it's neither here nor there for me.
I'm going to assume that they will be like Sky High, but with DC characters.
It's good for our customers.
Well, I know it's not actually like a high school thing.
It'll be good for our customers because our kids section is one of our best-selling sections.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
It'll definitely...
We'll see what they're doing with Mira, actually. That's the one I'm kind of most curiously interested in.
The other thing that is interesting is DC Vertigo is getting a big relaunch.
Oh, right.
Mark Doyle, who's the editor who brought us the Batgirl of Burnside, who's been running Batman for a while now, who is one of the editors I really like to DC. He's now the guy helming Vertigo after Shelley Bond left to do her own thing in IDW. There are 7 books. They all look really interesting. So they're mostly I don't know most of these creators. I see a few like Ben Blacker. I know Brian Hill, who's doing the Wildstorm, Michael Cray.
Mm-hmm. When I was reading about it, I think they were saying some of them were they're people coming from outside the comics industry, which does make me a little nervous sometimes.
Yeah, me too.
Not entirely, but a number of them are.
But I think the thing that Vertigo should be doing is doing things nobody else is doing, mm-hmm. and all these books sound like things nobody else is doing. So, Border Town is about a small town on the Mexico-U.S. border beset by supernatural creatures from Mexican folklore, leading to racial tensions between amongst the town's population with a young kid and his misfit friends caught in the middle. Interesting.
Yeah.
Hex Wives is about a coven of witches with vast magical powers, brainwashed by men to become subservient housewives, only to discover their suburban lives are a lie. So that sounds like sort of feminist revenge fantasy.
Right.
That sounds interesting.
A little bit of Stepford Wives in there, but like kind of undone.
There's a story about this is art by Leandro Fernandez, a biracial FBI agent who can pass as white, who infiltrates a gang of white supremacists to investigate death of a fellow agent. That's interesting. Goddess Mode, which is about... This is Robert Rodriguez from Spider-Gwen doing the
art. Yeah.
With Zoe Quinn writing. Set in a near future where a powerful AI manages all of humanity's needs, only for the tech support in charge of monitoring its systems to discover a secret cyber world where female superheroes fight to save the cheat codes from reality from being stolen by horrific monsters. Again, nobody else is doing that.
Yep.
Rob Sheeran and Barney Bagenda's High Level, a post-apocalyptic story about a smuggler tasked with bringing a supposed child messiah to the mysterious mythical city of High Level. Safe Sex by Tina Horn and Mike Dowling, a dystopian thriller set in a future where the government regulates and controls sexual pleasure, leading to an underground resistance led by sex workers.
Those last two are maybe the most interesting for me. I worry a little bit that these might be a little too on the nose.
I have the same
torn
worries.
From the headlines kind of stuff. But there kind of comes down to, is the execution good? And that I have to see.
And the one I'm most excited about, Mark Russell, the guy who did Flintstones.
Yeah.
And the Stanglepost Chronicles.
Yep.
Is writing Second Coming, which sees the Son of God return to modern day Earth, because God hopes Jesus will learn a lesson in godliness from the almighty superhero Sun Man, only for Christ to discover the message of his gospel has become horrifically twisted in the years since his crucifixion. So basically, it's Jesus teams up with Superman.
Yeah.
And it looks hilarious.
I like this premise.
Yeah. Mark Russell is always like...
And I feel like that writer could come through on that.
Yeah. So, yeah.
I would also be interested to see if that one... That actually seems like the one that's kind of like... out there enough that I could see it making some headlines and actually getting some crossover appeal. Any one of them could.
Yeah.
But that one seems most poised to provoke.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, that's it for us for news. We'll be back in just a second to talk about comics for the week.
One familiar cry.
We're talking comics for the week of Wednesday, July 13th. July? June?
June
13th.
June
13th.
You're like fast forwarding a month. What's up with that?
I'm ready to be done with June. okay, so
that's it. We've got a good batch of books.
Yeah, it's a big week.
It really is.
Nick and I both read like 30 books each.
Yeah, it's a larger than usual stack.
Nick, what is your pick this week?
My pick is I'm a complete and total pick of all things Marvel this week, so I'm going to choose Thor number 1.
And I guess it'll just fall upon me to look out for DC, since you never look out for them.
It's true. I never look out for DC. I never pick their books at all.
So back to Marvel.
But yes. Now, I mean, I'm a sucker for Jason Aaron's Thor run, and I feel like with this issue, he's sort of gone full on Thor Ragnarok. He's sort of embraced the action-adventure
nature. You mean Thor Ragnarok
that.
The movie, or Ragnarok the concept of all the gods
the
dying?
Movie.
Okay.
The movie. Sort of, because the big deal with this is that after... Asgard was destroyed, all of Odin's like weapons have fallen to Earth into various places, and Thor is trying to retrieve them all,
That's what happens when you accidentally temp over a trash can in Asgard.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much
all
is.
Their magic items end up in.
So
Earth.
I love that this basically starts out with a Thor fighting a big X-Men villain, and has this sort of Indiana Jones type quality to it. Thor is cracking jokes a little bit, but also sort of just big smashy. We get there's a ton of stuff in this book, and we get sort of what is going on with Asgard, how is it being recreated.
His hammer or lack thereof.
Yes, that is a major point for it. He, in fact, now has multiple hammers. Yes, and that's a big point. The Jane Foster stuff is a big point in this.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask. There was a sort of epilogue to his to the Jane Foster run.
Yep.
And it was also like a prelude to this. Do people need to have read that to kind of dive into this?
I don't think you need to. That is definitely a bigger explanation on sort of the War of the Realms, which is going on with Malekith and all that. So that is a big chunk of it. But honestly, you could just jump in here.
I assume they made it, to be standalone-ish, too.
And that's sort of the story A. Uh-huh. And with all things Jason Aaron and Thor, there's always a story B. This one is future Thor, sort of granddaddy Thor. And
this is like, is it far-flung future?
Yeah, it's like eons, like 275 years in the future.
Yeah.
Thor has kind of recreated Earth, and basically, it's him and his granddaughters.
And you said they've shown up before.
Yeah. This is during like Thor God Butcher, like the beginning of Jason Aaron's run. So,
They? What's their deal? Are they like newbies to adventure? Are they well established characters?
They're kind of not newbies, but they're like Thor. Essentially, basically the Thor that we know. That's what they are in this world. And it's just a lot of fun. The art here by Mike Del Mundo in the first story is great.
He's doing fancy painted artwork.
He's doing fancy painting artwork. And then the second artist, Christian Ward, feels very kind of much in line with sort of the Russell Datterman style that we're sort of used to seeing. But yeah, no, it's a lot of fun. And there's, like I said, if you've been enjoying Thor anytime, you're still going to enjoy it. This is a great kind of restart with Thor being Thor.
Yep, Thor Odinson is back.
Yes. Dave, what is your pick?
My pick also has an Indiana Jones's feel and a barbarian type person who wields a big hammery type weapon, but it is not Thor.
Why you copy, DC?
This character did, I think, precede him, technically, though not in all of history.
There's also been an Indiana Jones feel going.
That's as I mentioned that, yeah. Okay. Yeah, so this character is Hawkman. They have this is the first issue of the new Hawkman series from DC. Which I was saying earlier today that Hawkman is my favorite character who's almost never in good stories. I've got little smattering ones. Like, I sometimes like reading the old, was it Gardner Fox stuff that Joe Kubert drew?
Sure.
There's a few odds and ends stories that John Byrne did with him in the 80s. I like, with some misgivings, the Geoff Johns run from, like, what, early 2000s, I guess?
Yeah.
Maybe
did
mid-2000s.
Did you like Ostrander's Hawkworld?
Oh, and Hawkworld is the big one, and that's also the most unusual one. It was very much its own thing.
Yeah.
But in its way, it gets kind of acknowledged here.
Yeah, it does.
Don't get scared. Don't get scared. I know what you're thinking. Like, oh no, I'm gonna have to, like, there's all the different continuities. And no, but they do sort of seem to stick with what Johns did, which is the multiple lives thing.
Yeah.
And in fact, they expand on it in kind of an interesting way. I don't want to quite say what that is, but it's an interesting way. And did not completely terrify me, given that I was not huge into that. I thought it was okay. But it begins with an internal monologue as Hawkman kind of talks about, like, the sort of the weird irony of him, that he's like this high-flying guy, but he also likes to clamber around in, like, dark, secret, you know, claustrophobic places for artifacts. He's the archaeologist. And this has a cool DC Universe-type opening archaeology thing. He's talking about a lost tribe from the Gorilla City
from Gorilla
Kingdom.
City.
Yeah, in ancient times. They mention a seafaring cousins of them who plundered Africa's waters for treasures and offered them up to their pagan god. He has a specific need for one of those treasures, And he goes prowling around a temple, and you may be shocked to discover that he activates some bad stuff in the Indiana, full-on Indiana Jones tradition. Anyway, I'm not the biggest Brian Hitch fan. He's probably, most people know him best for what was a defining moment in comics when he did, The Ultimates?
Yep. Yeah.
And maybe a little bit for The Authority, too, from that era. Yeah. But I have to say, he does a pretty good job here.
This is the best art I've seen from a while.
I'm not in love with the exact look of his Hawkman, but he keeps all the basics, you know, the gold bands, the green tights and stuff like that, and the red boots. And he does look pretty cool in action.
Certainly better than the Savage Hawkman, which is the last thing we got.
Savage Hawkman, oh yeah, yeah. When people try and, like, metal up Hawkman, it doesn't quite work. It's not... I almost can respect the attempt, but...
I also loved that Venditti was utilizing the DC Universe by having a certain magic character show up and sort of offer... Carter help.
I like the big adventure-y feel in the opening. That's what I want Hawkman to be.
Yep. There's a big action sequence that kind of runs throughout the issue. I'm gonna go ahead and say who he talks to early on. I don't think it's that big a secret.
No.
But he consults with Madame Xanadu, and I like their discussion. It's interesting. He does have a kind of Indiana Jones-ish look, sort of the rugged, handsome guy with a 5 o'clock shadow. He doesn't feel like he's trying to be, although that was obviously an influence, I don't feel like he's like a complete knockoff of Indiana Jones.
No,
he is, he feels a little bit, actually in his way, more professorial.
Yeah.
And their discussion is interesting. The stuff that kind of emerges from that are some of the big secrets and reveals, which I won't get into. But I'm going to have to think about it a little bit to wrap my head around it, but... There are some... I honestly think it's a kind of a neat idea in the way that it somewhat expands on what's been done with him before and allows me to still imagine the Hawk world out the link out there. But primarily, this is the one... This is the more adventure-type one. This is the guy with the mace who's an archaeologist one. It's a strong first issue. There was, like... Other than some minor misgivings about, well, you know, how is all this, there's some one or two of these reveals going to play out with him, the base issue is, like, rock solid. It's as good a Hawkman as we've had in a long time.
Well, and I think of interest that all of us were sort of uncertain about this.
Right. Nobody was like, can't wait for that new Hawkman next week. I was kind of vaguely dreading it, I suppose.
Unfortunately, the track record for Hawkman books has not been great, because, Randy's The Savage Hawkman was kind of a bomb.
Right. But you know what's funny, though? Whenever they do some kind of, like, a Hawkman miniseries or the death of Hawkman and stuff like that, suddenly people perk up. It's like, I feel like they want the character to be good.
Which is a little weird.
Exactly.
But, you know.
but like, when they first start happening, people are interested in that. They're like, Hawkman, something's going on with Hawkman. They want it to be good.
Yep.
And I feel like there's a shot here. It looks like it could be good. Robert Venditti is the guy who's been doing, Green Lantern stuff for a while?
Yeah.
And not super remarkable, but a good sort of, I'm going to say, journeyman sort of work. Remains to be seen how this will all play out, but I think it's a good start, and if you are one of those people who are like, I'd like to see a decent Hawkman comic, I'd say give it a shot and see what you think.
Yeah.
Randy, what you got?
So I want to talk about The Weatherman, number one, which is a new Image book written by Jody LaHepp, and you might know that name, probably won't, but the reason you would know it is because he's the co-writer of Shirtless Bear Fighter.
Oh, yeah.
Artist by Nathan Fox, a guy we've been liking since DMZ.
Yeah.
And who does phenomenal work here.
Yeah, it's great.
This takes place on Mars in the year 2770. Something has happened to Earth that basically eradicated it. It maybe irradiated or something. So Mars, overlooks this sort of devastated Earth. And the story is focused on this sort of slacker weatherman, this sort of wacky weatherman guy who comes into work, does this crazy... almost stand-up comedy version of the weather report, and he's like this celebrity that people love, and then he goes out on a date with a bartender and is being tracked down by a kill squad. As to why, that isn't revealed to the very last page of the book, and so I feel like there's a lot to this premise that has not been revealed yet, but as an intro, I was fascinated by this. I also just really, really like the art.
How comedic is it, Randy?
What's that?
How comedic is it?
It's not as comedic as Shirtless Bear Fighter.
Okay. No. I was trying to wonder, because this sounded like, in its way, like it could be in the same vein as Chew. I mean, you know, like
it's not even that parody. It's
okay.
It's basically what I would say is the lead character is comedic.
Yeah.
And so I mean, you get sort of a charming, funny lead.
Yeah.
But
okay.
The story is serious.
It's okay. Sort of along the same lines of like York from Why the Last Man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I will say as a spoiler and as a trigger warning for people, the dog gets killed.
No.
And
that was a big thing for me.
I feel like it was for me too. Is that I was really enjoying the book, and it almost put me off it. And I feel like I understand why they did it. It's like the one good thing in his life, and they sort of want to make that point.
Wait, what do you mean? The dog was the one good thing, not the death of the dog. No, I was like, oh my god.
Yeah. No, the dog is the one good thing in his life, and to have it killed is like a big thing. But I just like, oh man, that's everybody knows you don't kill the dog.
Yeah.
Like if you're gonna do that, you've got to earn it, and I don't feel like they quite did.
By the way. This means that I have to tell the story of my favorite dog killing.
Oh, good.
Okay,
go right ahead.
All right, the one I've got is the book I Am Legend. Nick, have you ever read it?
No, I've not. I've seen the various movie adaptations.
I think they did some version of... Did he have a dog in the Will Smith one?
He did.
Yeah, there is a... I actually don't remember quite how it is, other than I think the vampires get him. They are vampire-type creatures.
Vampire
but
zombies.
They there's a great sequence. I mean, I only mean that it's effectively done. It is not a... It is, of course, a heart-rending sequence. But the guy, this dog, is so scared in this future where everything is out to kill him, that the guy... In the place where he's holed up, he'll like go out and sit on his porch during the day, and he'll hold out food. And like over the course of like months, the dog gradually gets closer and closer till eventually, you know, he doesn't make any sudden moves. And like after doing that for like several weeks, he eventually pets it, very slowly wins it over. Later on, he gets killed by vampires.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's horrible, but it's a great scene. I think Richard Matheson wrote that book, and that guy could write a scene. Anyway. I was going to say, there can be exceptions. You can write a good story. The Terminator killed the warning dog in the future in the first Terminator movie.
Yeah.
But, yes, it is a kind of triggering, kind of nasty thing, and you got to kind of make sure that it fits the story and events.
It turned the book, which had been a little lighter up to that point, very, very dark.
Yeah.
And I think that the tone of the book may wind up being dark. So I feel like this first issue is really interesting, but I don't know how predictive it is of what the second issue is going to be.
Right.
Yeah.
But I'm fascinated by where it's going to go, and the art's fantastic.
Well, Nathan
and the
Fox draws one hell of an action sequence, and there's some there is legitimate great action here.
Sometimes it's nice to have a book where you don't quite know where it's going to go. I mean, that could be a good thing. It also means it could go completely off course and crash into a wall.
All right, my backup pick is considerably lighter. This is Marvel Rising Alpha number 1. This is their new, sort of seems like it's competing with DC Superhero Girls. It has taken a lot of their more diverse characters, a lot of their female characters, so Ms. Marvel, Squirrel Girl, Captain Marvel... Patriot America and a couple other characters, and it's going to sort of do sort of younger readers versions of it. This is Devin Grayson returning to comics after a long way out. And
this
is a story about a girl being sort of harassed by dude bros on about computer games, and finding that she has some inhuman powers. And,
literally inhumans.
Yep.
Based. Okay.
And she is in the class that Doreen Green is teaching about video game development that Kamala Khan is taking.
Oh, that's
so they all
cool.
Wind up being there, and this girl is being bullied, starts using her powers for evil, and is all about sort of the two heroes teaming up against this new character. And it's interesting because they do
so
a lot
of... So they're teaming
with...
up against somebody who kind of became a bad guy because of bullying?
Yes.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah,
it's
less on the nose than you would think.
Yeah.
And also...
I like all those characters, too.
I also like what they did with Doreen and Kamala Khan, where sort of they're trying to figure out each other's secret identities a little bit, and they work together well. They do a little bit with Doreen, with them and their civilian identities. It's a really fun... If you like these characters, this is a fun offshoot. If you don't like these characters, or if you don't know these characters more properly, this is going to be a good introduction, which is kind of what I was worried about. I wanted this to be a book where people be like, oh... I don't know who this Ms. Marvel is, but she's cool.
Right.
And that was, I feel like they did that with both her and Squirrel Girl. So
nice.
I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with the rest of the Marvel Rising line. I thought
the art looked nice in it.
And the art is good, yeah. I don't know what I describe it as. It's sort of got an animated style.
Yeah, I'm going to say a little bit more. So here's what I'm going to say. It's somewhere between the art on Squirrel Girl and the art on Ms. Marvel,
yeah,
actually.
I agree. It's got, yeah, I agree. Dave, what is your backup pick?
My backup pick was a rarity for me, which is, although I think there may have been one or two exceptions over the years, a Mark Miller comic from Image. You know, this guy is writing 800 books. Is he not? There's Kick-Ass and there's Hit Girl. Okay. He has been, he has over the years written 800 books. Yeah. And he also, this one in particular seems to be tied in, it's like it's getting Netflix promotion, and some people have even been calling us up and like asking if they have that Netflix magic comic. It's called The Magic Order. And is it a miniseries or an ongoing?
Randy? We don't know.
Okay.
I feel like all of us, it's going to be probably like a Jupiter's Legacy.
With an open end.
Yeah, yeah. Six issue miniseries. Yeah.
But yes, almost certainly this one is I guess, in development at some sort of to be a Netflix show at some point.
Well, it was also created, unlike, I guess not unlike, most of Mark Miller's comics, it was created to be a TV show or a movie.
Right. Yeah. But much more specific, even more specifically than usual.
Yeah, more specifically because Netflix bought Miller World and everything he writes is going to be a movie. I don't know
if it's more specifically or if it's just that this time he actually knew the movie deal was in place, because he always has done this.
Yeah.
Everything he's created is going to Image or starts to create.
This is not a guy who goes and does a weird indie book that could not translate.
Well, I think he might be flipping from movie to TV now. So. Yeah,
right. but it's a series that I've never actually seen The Magicians, but I think it'll be people who like that will
this will be a pretty easy switch.
That's
pretty good.
Because it is an adult world of magicians. This is, you know, got an R rating, not super hard R, but it's an R rating. And it begins with this fairly dramatic assassination sequence where a couple of shadowy figures wearing, one wearing a like a bowler hat and one wearing those old tri-corner hats like pirate times, but wielding magic wands, they like possess in this apartment building a kid and have him go and get like a butcher knife and go into the room where this couple has just had sex and stab one of them.
Yep.
As an assassination.
Yep.
And they're just like, that was a tool for them. They're like, oh yeah, there's a kid nearby, we could use that. And so it's pretty messed up, but this is the kind of dark world of wizarding that he's doing. It is not Harry Potter-ish.
No.
And after the assassination, the guy says, first wizard down.
You know what though? It is Harry Potter-ish in that it does seem to be sort of this, there's a wizardly order that's been going on underneath the scenes, beneath the reality where we know, and they have their own, they all had, I'm blanking on all the names of Harry Potter right now, but you know, they all
the
had
Weasleys
their,
and
the Weasleys,
stuff like
they
that.
Had their past, the, yeah. They all had their strife within their families, that kind of thing. These guys all have their old grudges and that kind of thing.
It does feel like he's building a world and that it's a very well fleshed out world right from the get go. I really meant more in just that it's darker than Harry Potter.
Oh yeah.
And indeed, we will be introduced to a sort of a magic family in this.
Yep.
Some of them who are close to each other, some of them who are somewhat estranged. But they all seem to kind of, they generally pull together in this. There's
his characters are good. I like all his characters.
There's at least one or two. Yeah, they get kind of memorable, I'm going to say kind of movie-style introductions as they're revealed. Like this chick who's, she's in the back of a cop car and being brought in for, what was it she did? Oh, some horrible, something went down. She slept with somebody at a kid's birthday party.
Yes.
Not a kid.
No,
she slept with the husband of the wife. Yeah, of the family that was throwing it.
Yeah.
And she's they're looking at her business card and it says like children's entertainer, stage magician, professional escapologist. And one of the cops is like, "Is escapologist even a thing?" And she's like, "Well, take a look in your rearview mirror." They look back and she's gone.
That was a great moment.
Yeah,
that's one thing. I think that Miller has done a lot of stuff where we feel like he goes too dark or too exploitative. But one thing we got to give him credit for, he does good characters, and he does good scenes.
Yep.
Yeah.
And both of those are in evidence here.
He did get to do his darkness here by having a kid stab somebody in the face.
Yeah, it's very dark.
But it is not, the overall tone of the issue does not match that one scene.
No.
That's meant to be the startling introduction that many movies have, where something kind of horrific occurs, and you're like, oh, these guys are playing for keeps.
Yeah.
Over the course, I won't tell you about everybody else in the family, but you meet some of the other ones. Sort of the, I'm going to say, like, the kind of the patriarch of the family is, like, a stage magician who...
I almost got a little Zatara vibe on
it. Yeah, and it's funny, he, like, uses... it doesn't seem like he's using real magic in this. Maybe just stage magic.
Right.
And then, you meet several other ones during the course of it. And a big sort of incident occurs at the funeral for the character who was killed in the beginning, which sets up, without saying too much, sort of the role of this family, a suggestion of sort of like a magic protectors of the Earth that have been like, they it seems like they generally keep hidden, right?
Yeah,
they are definitely, nobody in this world knows magic is a thing.
Right.
But there's definitely factions, rival factions within it, and some scary people within those factions. And Miller's thought of, you know, some pretty interesting uses of their powers and how they work. The dangerous group that shows up at this like makes the sun disappear when they when they arrive. And there is there's a creepy shape changer that shows up. Anyway, then over the course of the rest of the issue, you meet some of the other family members and you get some setup for what's going to be going on. I forgot to mention, it has beautiful art by Olivier Coipel. We maybe know him best from, X-Men vs. Avengers, House of M.
Thor.
Yeah, he had a big run on Thor when Thor came back for J. Michael Straczynski's run. Yeah. He's fantastic.
Or if you're old school, he worked on Legion.
Yeah. Where we all loved him. Yeah.
Yep. Mark Miller, it's almost a little depressing how many good artists he knows. The fact that I don't usually like his stuff makes me sad that he works with so many good artists. But in this case, since I'm liking this book, I can be glad for once.
Yep.
Anyway, it's a pretty excellent first issue, and people generally know to pick up Mark Miller first issues and try them out. This one is, I think, one of the better ones he's done in a while. So
yeah, I agree. I was pretty impressed with this.
Nick,
what's your backup?
I am going to pick up Venom number 2.
Yeah.
Which I think I was telling Randy that as concepts go, Venom was okay, but Donnie Cates has taken that concept and kind of reworked it in such a way that works so much better.
But you actually have a fondness for Venom in general, don't you? Since the Lethal Protector years?
I did. I mean,
But maybe you recognize that there are somewhat limited concepts,
or
you can't be dragging it out all the time.
No, and this gives it a larger concept at play, and it utilizes the Marvel Universe. There is an appearance by a certain character in here that I thought was interesting, but dealing with sort of like symbiotes in like wartime, like Vietnam and stuff like that, is interesting.
And very much evolving the concept of symbiotes bigger than just... this is bigger than it's ever been.
I was going to ask, can you say briefly what it is he's doing overall that's different from the normal Lethal Protector?
Well, I mean, it's just taking the concept and kind of mapping on a new origin for it. And
I do remember that they suggested that the symbiotes might have been on Earth in the past.
Yes.
Yeah, well, there was like a Vietnam unit that was merged with symbiotes.
Okay,
yeah.
That's
and
interesting.
And that's part of it. There's one of the lead guys is a guy from the Vietnam War who used to be a Venom.
Oh, that's
basically
pretty cool.
And they're definitely tying into the alienness of the Venom symbiote.
In its way, that kind of expansion is a little bit like what Geoff Johns did with Green Lantern.
Yeah, very much.
Coming up with different factions, creating a tapestry and history that you can draw on.
But I also like in this issue that Donny Cates kind of gives a clear definition of who Eddie Brock is through sort of like a series of vignettes about his life.
Yeah.
And it's just really interesting to see those kind of brought back, because sometimes I forget exactly what Eddie Brock's deal is. I feel like he's just kind of a mirror to Peter Parker, but kind of a dude bro version of him.
Yeah. What if Peter Parker lifted weights?
But, I mean, there's definitely more to it than that, and I actually didn't know some of the stuff that was brought up, which is interesting. And, man, the art in this, which is Ryan Stegman, is just... He's just killing it. There's big splash pages of giant monsters.
Yeah.
But even, like, the moment-to-moment stuff of, like, Vietnam-era war is great. And just little conversations, all the facial expressions. I mean...
Just a reminder, by the way, Marvel should pick up James Stokoe's Spider-Man in Vietnam.
And
art.
This... Correct. I mean, some of this actually reminds me a lot of that.
That's interesting.
Which, yes, they should... grab that. But yeah, no, this is just a really fun issue. I'm digging it.
It's a weird mix of sort of gritty crime and Cthulhu type
horror.
Yeah it really works. What else is on your list this week?
The third Batman Prelude to the Wedding. This is Batgirl versus Riddler, as Riddler comes to Birdside to challenge Batgirl.
And tell her she'll die alone.
Sure, yes.
That's on the cover.
That is right there on the cover. Punisher.
That's just mean.
That's true. Punisher 226 sees Frank go up against some of his Hydra brothers.
That was a really good issue.
It's a really good issue, and there's some great lines. told through Crossbones and Taskmaster and Zemo. And they make Zemo as scary as he should be, honestly. Yeah. Hunt for Wolverine, the Adamantium Agenda number 2. Tom Taylor sort of continues kind of the Avengers era Wolverine story with a select group of individuals trapped on a submarine at a black market.
That select group is like not a bunch of nobodies.
No, it's Jessica Jones, Spider-Man, Luke Cage, and Iron Man.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not nobody, but it's basically the new Avengers era Wolverine. And the second issue was a lot of fun. Detective Comics 982, which is the start of the new writers.
That's the one-shot, right?
Yeah. But it's... Is it Michael Morcott?
Yeah, no, Brian Ebbard is taking over.
Okay. So this is actually just a one-shot. It has amazing artwork by Sebastian Femora. And this is sort of dealing with a... Deacon Blackfire is a known entity in the...
Yeah, wasn't he the guy who ran the cult?
Yeah, I think this is harkening back to the Batman cult.
Weird.
Which was a weird story in its own. This was a really interesting one-shot sort of dealing with that character's coming back and sort of haunting Batman. The 9th issue of Mr. Miracle, it's coming in on its finale. This one is all about peace talks and sort of life on Apocalypse. And a dark side sort of twisting the knife a little bit into Scott's...
jerk.
Yeah, dark side's a jerk.
He's a mean guy.
But again, beautiful artwork by Mitch Gerads and
there's
Tom
that
King.
Cover of him where it looks like he's upside down crucified is also a peace symbol.
It is. Crazy. Which is what they're trying to... The peace talks.
Whoa.
Yeah, there's a lot there.
Layers.
There's a lot to unpack. Man of Steel number 3, which Bendis continues to... portray the destruction of Krypton.
I'm more interested in the arson plot that's going on, though.
I know. The arson plot is interesting. They continue doing work with the new Fire Chief, which I really like.
Yeah, I like that character.
Bendis also brings in another DC staple to help Superman, which I liked. There is some darkness in here that I was a little unsure of, but we'll see. I thought it was a very... solid issue with some stellar artwork by Ryan Sook and Jason Fabok. So, yeah, I love seeing Ryan Sook, so I'm a big fan of it. Plastic Man number 1, the new book by Gail Simone and Adriana Mello.
Really nice art.
It's great artwork. Again, I wasn't quite sure exactly what the story was going to be, and it does sort of tell kind of his origin story, but it's definitely in like present time and. Plastic Man being Plastic Man, which I like, and I don't know, Randy, you read
it
as well, right?
It's got a bit of an edge, to it for Plastic
Man. Yeah, it's definitely a bit of an edge, but...
But there's also some funny stuff. There's the bit where he is trying to scare the criminals and transforms into Wonder Woman.
Yes, which is great. But I love Gail Simone. She's been killing it on other books. I think one Randy will talk about, and it's good to see her back at DC as well. Flash number 48, which is the second part of the Flash War, was fantastic. And I didn't get to read it, but Nancy Drew gets a relaunch as sort of a Veronica Mars style.
They've done a relaunch or like a thing a few months or years ago.
The miniseries was very much more in the sort of older Nancy Drew with the older Hardy Boys.
Right.
And it was much more of a Veronica Mars take. This one is a lighter, what I would say, in the Boom tradition.
Yeah. I thought the art looked good. I just didn't have enough time to read
Thompson
this one.
Kelly Thompson writing. She did Hawkeye.
Dave, what else on your stack?
Let's see. There is a comic from a band that I don't know anything about called Starboy.
Yep.
the band is The Weeknd. Honor told me it's based on a breakout single that actually had like a superhero theme to it, and so I guess they expanded that into a comic, and I imagine fans might want to check it out.
Yep.
Let's see. Nick, did you mention the Titans?
Nope, no, I did not.
Okay. Randy, you read it more than I did, so I will skip that. Old Man Logan has him going up against Kraven. I always like anything Kraven in it, and I have to mention it for that. Yep. There's a little Disney Pixar Incredibles book for kids, somewhat in this... It is a comic, but it looks like it's in the style, the art style of the little golden books, sort of the Star Wars ones that they've been doing.
It's two stories. One is Dash and Violet trying to be superheroes without anybody catching them,
uh-huh.
and one with Dash... It's all Dash and Violet focused. The one with Dash and Violet trying to clean up after all the mess that the Jack-Jack is making, not realizing that he's making them.
And there's a little bit of activity book stuff, too.
And a little bit of, like, how their artist decides on, like, a little bit of how to draw kind of stuff.
Oh, that's cool. I missed that part.
It's like $8. It's a little hardcover. This is a great book for Incredibles, young Incredibles fans.
Let's see. The only other thing I think I was going to mention was a graphic novel called Hunters by Paul Mayberry write?
I believe he writes this one, yes.
Plot by Paul Mayberry, but working with a bunch of different artists, which is sort of like, I didn't get to read a ton of it, but it looks like it's sort of an anthology fantasy comic.
Yeah.
With Paul Mayberry is a super talented artist, and like it looks like he's assembled a group of really talented artists. Some of them like might remind you of like Miyazaki art or... You know, fantasy art like Mobius, like the Conan artists, like Kerry Nord. There's a really wide variety, but in general, I think if you're a fantasy fan, you might want to take a look at this. Randy, what do you got?
All right, so as you mentioned, the Titans Special, which spins out a young No Justice. Nightwing is putting together a new team of Titans to deal with a problem that's come out of Metal. This is a good premise. I always like putting together the team issue. He puts together a pretty classic team with a couple of twists. So that's good if you're looking to jump on Titans. By Night is the new Boom book by John Allison, who does Giant Days. Stellar is a book from Joseph Keating with art by Brett Blevins. It is a sci-fi book. The art is spectacularly good. Has sort of a painty look to it. I think people will probably dig that. Marvel 2-in-1 Annual is the Thing and the Infamous Iron Man. And it is pretty heavily focused on sort of the backstory of this version of Doom. And he is a run-in with the Council of Reeds. Domino number 3, which has been continues to be really, really good. I'm liking what Gil is doing, which is actually giving Domino a backstory and filling in a little bit more about who she is and how she got her powers, which it's weird this character has been around for 25 years and we have no idea about any of it.
Is she not just a mutant?
No, they're doing more with it.
Okay.
So basically, but I mean, like, we knew nothing about her other than who she was. We've never known who she was before this.
Right.
We knew she's a mercenary, and that's it. Gail is fleshing her out, and in so doing is making her a much more interesting character. I actually really like this book. Infinity Countdown Darkhawk continues to be really entertaining, despite the fact that I have no idea about Darkhawks. Mage Hero 9 number 9 is continues that story. Deadhand number 3, I've been really enjoying the story of sort of Cold War espionage. It is revealed in the end of issue 1, I didn't want to spoil it earlier, but basically this takes place in a Soviet town. This town in the middle of Soviet Russia that is actually made to be an American town. It was created as some kind of like Cold War project. And now they're trying to keep it secret. And somebody went there. Things did not go well for him. So this dude who is, I believe, basically Idris Elba playing James Bond is going on his own, defying protocol to go and find out what happened to his friend. There's some great action sequences. If you like what Warren Ellis was doing with James Bond, this feels like the kind of thing I would have thought he would have done. Really liking that book. And Analog number 3, which is the Couriers in the Future where there's no internet, which continues to be a really good sort of noir book right up my alley. I also wanted to mention A Quick and Easy Guide to They, Them Pronouns, which is a little book from Oni and Limerence Press that is a non-binary person and a cis person doing a cartoon conversation about non-binary pronouns. And It's educational, it's entertaining, and...
If you're looking to get your head straight about sort of gender diversity, this looked like a really good book.
It's really good, it's a cute little read, and it's cheap enough that you could buy it and give it to someone who needs it. Or, as I suggest on page 2, if they're being a jerk, you can throw the book at them. And finally, I want to mention that Ms. Marvel has its 4th hardcover, and that's one of my favorite books, and I'm glad always to have those hardcovers come in. That is about it for us for the week. I think we'll be back next week with more. Until said time,
Yo Joe!
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating and review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.